Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures. I'm your host, Paul Booth. I don't know why I always say that. It's like there's ever going to be another host. So, of course, welcome. This is another adventure and journey into the Newport Beach Film Festival. And we appreciate the listens for everyone on the different films. We appreciate the filmmakers that have been sending them out. Today is a nice double feature, two films that were actually very different, and one kind of was just excellent filmmaking. The other was really good filmmaking and a unique story, and there's something that I want to preface this with. Again, we don't have any way for you to know who I am or my experiences, but I've had the good fortune to crew to television and film, and I've had the good fortune to produce indie features, some that are on Netflix, and I've also made short films. And so when I look at this, it's a constant challenge to not be paying attention to the filmmaking and to really separate myself as an audience, because I have the responsibility as the host and the person reviewing. I don't like the word critic because films on the show, if we don't enjoy it, we just respectfully tell the filmmaker that, and we still wish every filmmaker the best, even if we didn't enjoy their film, because we all know how hard it is. I've personally produced some of the biggest crap on this planet that I actually found in the $1.99 box at Blockbuster, so who am I to be the be-all end-all? However, when I look at a film, it's just you can't cut part of who you are out. So when I go into the second film in the show, Call of the Void, nothing against that the filmmaking just kind of took me away. So I want to let you guys know that. That's why I'm going to start with Colby. And I'm going to read you the synopsis here. So if you hear little noises, it's just the pages of the program. I always have to explain that. I have a great sound editor, but he's just like, what noises are you making sometimes? Colby, I dug because it felt like a 70s film. And to those of you that don't know, a lot of 70s films are just basically character-driven pieces. And they're usually defined by the fact that everything else in the world of the character changes, but they stay the same. And we're so used to these movies where the character has to be a certain thing at 30 minutes. It has to have a turning point and a change. And the 70s films are so interesting because it really takes a look at the fact that a lot of the times we don't change. Maybe our status at a job changes, or we're more broke, or we're sad, or we're having a tough time. But at the core, we're still who we are. We have the same opinions. We have the same friends. And we have the same values. So I really dug Colby. And what was interesting was it wasn't a movie that was meant to be suspenseful. But it came off very suspenseful. I didn't know whether it was going to go really dark or whether it was just going to stay on this side that it stayed. And of course, I won't get too much into it because I don't want to ruin the ending, but I want to give a kudos to, there's two directors on this, Alex Markman and Jake Fuller. And then the producer, pardon me if I pronounce this wrong to you guys and your team, Halava Safsky and Alex Bach. I've shared some emails with Alex, nice guy. You know, I really enjoy talking with filmmakers. We're going to possibly be having him on for an interview. As you know, on a side Talking Pictures, we have the really jazzed about that. So it's just kind of, we're going to see how schedules go. He's out of New York. We love having filmmakers from anywhere, but I love the New York style. He's so nuanced. And of course, this film, I'm assuming it was Long Beach, Long Island, and I've never been to that area. I've only been to Queens, the Bronx, Brooklyn, and Manhattan. But with Colby, a troubled young drifter living out of a duffel bag uses the people she comes across in her travels to meet her basic needs. Food, shelter, transportation. When a misguided turn strands her in a small beach community, she breaks into a wealthy family's vacation home and unwittingly becomes their guest. Now that's kind of cool. Okay, I'm sorry. Now this loner must deal with a father with a wandering eye, a mother with a nurturing instinct, and a sheltered teenage daughter whose obsession with Colby threatens to change the way she sees her parents. So this film, obviously, just in the synopsis, let alone my boofing words, because I am so excited when I'm doing this, was just the most simple premise. I want to give just incredible. I would love to do an episode of this show just talking about the cinematography alone, shooting in New York, capturing shots in Manhattan. It really made me think of like Midnight Cowboy, those shots of John Voight walking around as Joe Buck, the Drifter in the streets. I'd love to know if that was an influence for them. But for this film, Colby, it was really interesting to me because for most films, I think we're kind of sometimes it takes 5 minutes, sometimes it takes 10 minutes. Those books say it has to be within 10 minutes or it's not a good movie. But I could tell from the get-go that these filmmakers had a vision that they were putting out and that the vision was going to be unique and they were going to stick to the vision whether I went along or not. And that's where the side of me being a filmmaker myself appreciates, because really making films is about sticking to your vision. We do have bottom line. We do have the audience. We do have to think about what festivals like and what's, you know, all these different factors that quite technically have nothing to do with filmmaking. When you're there in the 10th hour of a day, and you know, you're hungry, you're tired, you don't know which direction is north or south, you're not really thinking about how can we market this. So these filmmakers pulled off a really great story. The actress was carrying the film, basically. There's a lot of the film is just her, and a lot of the film is silent. And I loved that silent film storytelling aspect of it. And this film didn't take any cheap shots or easy roads where it could have relied on New York or it could have relied on the beach. It stuck to what it was supposed to do. It didn't have the extra meat on the bone. So many films do that. It's so tough to watch as audience, but then it teaches you as a filmmaker, what does audience think is fat on the bone and what do they need to be just metaphorically consuming. And I think that Colby, I can't wait to see how far this film goes. I'm not going to be as surprised if this turns up on Netflix in a year or gets, they are smaller theatrical runs now for independent films. Unfortunately, when you see a gem at a film festival, it'll get a week in New York or a week in LA or sometimes a week in 15 or 18 cities. I've had a couple of friends that have been lucky enough to have that. So I think this can find its home. I think as much as effects, sequels, and remakes are overtaking our thought process, that ultimately there's going to be a return to people appreciating films like Colby. And I know for me, I turned it on a second time because the first time I was watching it, I kept getting distracted by other things because it's a very busy time. And I thought, you know what, this isn't respectful to the filmmaker. I'm going to just go back and start it over and just really soak it in. Turn off the cell phone and just be. And I was really happy that I saw it. I encourage you guys to check it out. It's really just a solid A of a movie. Breaking down all the other cinematic aspects, it's not one of those things that calls for that. Just great acting. Kudos to Colby, who Stephanie Brate, again, if I apologize with the Brate part, if it's not pronounced right, dug that. I love when actors can carry a film. It's been done so few times I mean, you have to go back to Charlie Chaplin when there wasn't even such thing as Cass, and Tom Hanks in Castaway, and it's just I dug it. I was thinking to myself, okay, this as soon as I kind of figured out we were on this journey with one actor actress, that she better, meet us halfway, meet the audience halfway, and she did it. So I give the kudos to her and the director. Of course, the writer has something to do with it. Film is a completely 100% a team effort. So when we see a great film and we think, oh, Martin Scorsese did it, I can tell you Martin Scorsese didn't carry a wire. He didn't put the food craft services truck together. He didn't hold up a light. So this performance for on the level of the performer, kudos. I hope that this opens more doors, or if you're where you want to be, I hope it adds to it. So again, Colby, check it out. The next film that we have to review here came. I want to say thank you to our friend Kim, who has always been supportive of the show, and myself. Always sends me good films, and this was no exception. Call of the Void. Again, Call of the Void, directed by Dustin Kahia. And it had a cinematographer that was, it's ACS. And again, don't mix that up with ASC. I'm not knocking the ACS, but I just want to let you know that that means it's a, because the first thing I was going to say is the cinematography in this movie is, I felt like I was watching on the waterfront at times. I felt like the cinematographer understood Barton Fink. I felt like it was Coen Brothers style, which then brings Roger Deakins into the mix as far as cinematographers. I just really appreciated, and of course, we never know how indie these films are. We don't know if they're indie or if they're high budget or mid budget. That has kind of been erased by the blockbuster. So now we just take it as the film is what it is. So I loved the lighting. It felt like a 40s film to me. And again, they weren't cheapening it, and they weren't trying to pull something over our head. It's supposed to take place in late 1940s, so that's why the cinematography was like a 40s movie. Los Angeles, and here's a synopsis. An eccentric young man becomes determined to win back the love of his life after she ends their relationship. Through his pursuit, he becomes blinded by his love-turned obsession. Optimistic expectations collide with reality as the truth unravels with each romantic attempt. Ignoring his friend's advice, he furthers his efforts, risking his deteriorating sanity and eventually his life. Now, this was just it was a deep film. It was short in the sense that, I mean, it was an hour. It wasn't like an hour and a half or 2 hours. And it really just had these amazing, the main actor, I want to say, I guess this was JT Alexander that was doing this, because the way it's listed, it doesn't tell you. There was these great master shots in the beginning, and you just do not see that except for in films in the 40s and 50s and 60s, 40s and 50s mainly, before editing got radical and split screen was introduced by the great Hal Ashby, director of Coming Home, Harold and Maude. He was an editor for Norman Jewison before that. And it's not MTV, so we don't need 1,000 cuts a mile per minute. And I really appreciated that, because that requires a heck of a lot of talent from the director, the cinematographer, the actor, the focus puller. Again, I'm going into film terminology here that some of you might be saying, huh? But this is a very well-made film. I liked the story. I can't say I could relate to the story, because I wouldn't do some of the stuff that the character does, but I think we can all relate to a deteriorating relationship, or being broken up with, or having to break up with somebody. So that's just kind of how it goes. But it's not the standard aspects of that. It's a real I kind of felt like it was a psychological drama. I could be off, but that's what's cool is the wine tastes different to everyone. So Call of the Void for filmmakers, I especially recommend seeing it, even if it's just a shot, some lighting, some editing, the way they obviously had a great sense of movies of the past. I'm not surprised seeing that the cinematographer has a suffix. When you see those BSC, ASC, AIC, AMC, when you know they're part of a cinematography society, then it's a different ball game. So I liked to see that there was that touch on the film because I have a great respect for cinematographers. They're probably my favorite aspect of filmmaking is to watch different cinematographers and compare their works. So I want to give Call of the Void a solid, I'm only going to say A minus because the film was not specifically my type, but as I said, I'm not the know-it-all ending answer of what a great film is. So I know that it was great and I could suggest it. And wouldn't be surprised if this ended up on Netflix either, because this had some just really great stuff, some great nuances and things that are going to catch people's eye and keep them interested. So Call of the Void, congrats to you guys, and we hope that film does well. Thank you again, Kim, for sending us that. We're almost nearing our wrap for the Newport Beach Film Festival 2016. Coming up next, we're going to have an episode about Kidnap Capital. It's going to be heavy duty, but I really want you guys to check it out and tune in. Our co-executive producer who attended the festival last year and this year with me is going to be talking about it. And it is just a film that we have to pay attention to. It's why I saved it for last, because I want to really support this film. And yeah, I'm going to leave it at that. It's called Kidnap Capital. Please make note to check tomorrow, Tuesday night or Wednesday morning on Facebook. You can like us. We have a Facebook page, Talking Pictures. Or go to our site that you're obviously on, go in our archives, and check out the review of Kidnap Capital. As always, whether it's evening, afternoon, morning, have a great day whenever you're listening to this, but make sure and watch a good movie. Aloha.